And that wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our host and executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our co-host and senior producer is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. Special thanks to producer Sabrina Jacobs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or check out our SoundCloud page by looking up Flashpoints. To contact Dennis, call 510-848-6767 extension 242 or by email at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's the KBOO Bike Show. It's 11 o'clock, and today on today's show, topics include the master plan. Hello. The Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan and the Gateway Green, which is Portland's first off-road cycling-focused park. And all that will come to you in just a minute following this test of the emergency alert system. Was the world's longest EIS test. And the KBOO Bike Show has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from City Bikes, a worker-owned, cooperatively run, new and used bicycle sales and service shop with two locations on Southeast Ankeny near KBOO, open 7 days a week for your bicycling commuting needs and online at citybikes.coop. Also by The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And you're listening to KBOO. Stay tuned.
Good Good morning. You are tuned in to KBOO FM Portland, and this is the KBOO Bike Show, broadcasting here live from the KBOO studios in Southeast Portland. I'm Tori Bortman, here with my fellow host this morning, Alon Robb. Good morning, Alon.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Thank you, but I would like to mention quickly, Mitch York, a cyclist who was killed last week, and I'd like to send condolences to his family and friends. And may there be no more accidents or killings on the roads.
Absolutely. Mm. And we'll make an announcement about a memorial ride that's going on for him at the end of the hour. On today's show, we're revisiting the Portland Off-Road Cycling Plan. A year ago, we had our first guest, Michelle Kunick-North, project manager for the Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan at the City of Portland Bureau of Environmental Services and Sustainability. This episode, we revisit the Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan to see what developments or impediments have cropped up in the past year. While some see Portland as the nirvana for cycling, we're sadly lacking as a city for off-road opportunities. Most Portlanders have to drive an hour or more to mountain bike. And in the past year, fights have gotten personal over Forest Park. Ground is breaking at Gateway Green, each examples of neighbors taking initiative. She's back today to give us an update on how the plan is coming along and hopefully how soon we can get out in some fresh dirt. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
We'll also be joined shortly by two of the members of the Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan Advisory Committee, a group that was yet to be formed a year ago, to see what they're bringing to the project and how their vision is shaping up. And later in the hour, we'll visit with Tom Archer, advisor of the board of Gateway Green and current trail builder and mastermind, to talk about the latest progress, including breaking ground at Gateway Green. So I'd like to start this morning by asking Michelle Kunick-North a little bit about what the plan is, this Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan. It sounds like a lot of fancy words, and I think it's for something pretty simple. So
sure. I agree. So the Off-Road Cycling Master Plan is really a citywide plan for a network of off-road cycling experiences. So what we're really talking about are looking for places around the city where people can ride a bicycle in a safe, sustainable, and fun way on dirt or some other natural surface.
And how long into the future are you looking when you have a plan?
It could be 5, 10, even 20 years out. We're trying to set something that can guide off-road cycling experiences for the foreseeable future.
And what's the difference between, or what does an off-road cycling experience encompass?
Sure. It could be anything from riding a mountain bike on a trail in the woods to riding a BMX bike in a pump track. It could be kind of riding along a paved trail on your normal commute bike and jumping off trail to enjoy a few rocks or logs to kind of spice up your morning commute.
Like a little skills area or right. Something like that.
And I should also say that this is a coordinated project within the City of Portland. It's being led by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, kind of facilitated, but it's really a partnership effort. And we have Portland Parks and Recreation, the Bureau of Environmental Services, the Portland Water Bureau, Bureau of Transportation, and Metro, our regional government, all kind of playing really instrumental roles.
So last time you were with us, you said that you had taken a step back, gone out, and started talking to a variety of community organizations and stakeholders to help define the ultimate goal of having more places within the city limits to ride off-road. And you also said you wanted a process that was transparent, builds bridges, can meet multiple goals, including recreation opportunities, being active, experiencing nature, while maybe supporting the environment and transportation goals would all be ideal. How do you think you've done reaching those goals, considering that you are putting all those different bureaucracies together to try to come to kind of a consensus over one plan?
Well, so those goals that we were hearing early on, we've really continued to hear throughout this process, and we're still very much in the middle of this planning process. But those goals that we heard from the community and from stakeholders at the beginning were really echoed by the Project Advisory Committee in establishing the vision and the desired outcomes for this planning process. So we have things that are statements that are guiding our planning process that are really promoting promoting an inclusive and transparent process, concepts like designing with nature. You know, how can we use this to really restore and enhance nature in the city? How can we use off-road cycling to promote health and safety of trail and park users? And how can we do things like expand access to recreation and nature for underserved communities and create new ways to get around the city so that this isn't just about off-road cycling as a recreational experience, but about, you know, can you ride your bike to these places? Can you get there by bus? You know, are we creating new recreation and transportation options for people all over the city?
So that you don't necessarily have to depend on a car to get to
exactly.
where you're going. Well, and on that note, I'd like to loop in our next guests, both of whom are members of the Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan Advisory Board. These are volunteer positions that help guide the process and progress of the plan. Carrie Leonard is an environmental scientist, hiker, and parent who has a strong interest in cycling opportunities for kids. She has a background in freshwater conservation and engineering. Michael Weitzel owns the Lumberyard Bike Park and is located his business in an underserved area of East Portland to provide recreational programs to youth. And that he's not actually very far from some new outdoor biking opportunities, which is great. He is also president of the Oregon Big Tent Recreation Coalition, which advocates for safe and responsible recreation in Oregon. Welcome, Michael Weitzel and Carrie Leonard.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah. Hi, Tori. Thank you.
So how did each of you get involved with the process? Why did you want to get on the advisory committee? Because last time we had Michelle Kunick-North with us, there was no advisory committee. And now you are a small part. I'm not sure how many members there are. I think over 10 of that advisory committee.
Well, I'll take that first, Tori. Thank you. I got involved because I very much care deeply about access to trails near the city and hopefully within the city. And I didn't know what the selection process would be like, but I decided to submit that and see if I was a voice that would be valued. And apparently that was the case.
That's great. How about you, Carrie?
One weekend, we drove out to Cascade Locks to go ride as a family, myself, my husband, and my son, who is 13. And then the next weekend, we said, hey, do you want to go back again? Because that was really fun. Mm. And he said, no, I don't want to ride with you. I want to ride with my friends. But they couldn't get there.
Spoken like a true 13-year-old.
Yeah, exactly. But they couldn't get there on their own because they're 13. They don't have a car. And so I want to work with a system that we can provide opportunity for all of these kids who want to ride with their friends but can't get to ride off-road right now on their own.
And how does the advisory committee process work? And does your advice, is it taken seriously by the city officials?
Carrie, why don't you handle that first?
I do feel like the city has listened, especially to the personal experiences that all the committee members have with especially the places that they live and ride within Portland. And so we're able to give some specific feedback, especially now that we are looking at individual properties as to whether this property is accessible, what it would take to make the property accessible, or if it, even though it washes out on paper as being a place that you could have a facility, that it may not work in practicality.
So you guys are able to provide some like on the ground personal living experience with these places.
Correct.
And I would have to agree with that. I really enjoy the detail that we're getting into and all of the documentation that's going along with the process.
That sounds really, really dorky.
I know, and it's absolutely overwhelming at times, but this is a resource that's going to be built upon over the next, 20 years. So
what kind of details, like, can you give me an example?
Well, in the discovery phase, we're sort of looking at, well, what exists now? And then we also looked at, well, what are the standards for trail building? And we turned to existing resources in other communities across the United States that have very successfully built networks of trails in the urban area. So by having a single resource that we can go back to and help drive the whole process means that we're going to learn from previous efforts and be able to build on something rather than having to start over again and again and again.
And what are some of those cities and what has been their experience?
Do you want to speak to that, Michelle?
Sure. We're looking at places all over the country. Could be cities like Richmond, Virginia, Duluth, Minnesota, Philadelphia. Are
those places with existing off-road cycling master plans?
No, and that's a good point. What we found when we started this process is there are a lot of places in the country that have decided to build off-road cycling trails or mountain biking trails in a specific park. You know, maybe they had a regional park, thought this would be a great use, and then kind of went through a planning process to figure out how to do that. What we couldn't find is an example of a city doing a citywide process like this, where they looked at all properties and kind of mapped out for the future where off-road cycling would go. So as Michael said, we can look to these other cities to give us really good on-the-ground examples of how this can work in practice, but they weren't necessarily good citywide planning examples. But there are plenty of places across the country, urban areas, that are finding ways to integrate this as a recreational transportation opportunity.
So you had mentioned that, Michelle Koenig-North, you had mentioned there was some complaints of a lack of transparency with the process before the off-road cycling master plan had even begun. Do you think the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability taking the lead on this project has resulted in better transparency and maybe therefore a more fruitful process?
Yeah, I do.
And I mean, you might be biased considering you're coming from that.
Well, but. You know, I think some of the important things, a few important things have been accomplished here. One is by bringing everyone to the same table, all the different city agencies, we've been able to start building kind of a common language and a common understanding, laying that foundation that Michael was talking about, so that we can move forward together more easily in the future. The other thing from a public perspective, I don't know that people necessarily know or even necessarily care who owns each property within the city. So if we're looking at 1,500 properties, it's much easier for someone to come into a process and comment or kind of get information on why a regulation might apply on one property but not on another property down the street because they're owned by two different agencies. So we're trying to streamline that public entrance into this project. And, you know, this coordinated approach really reflects how we operate. I think Powell Butte is a really good example of this, where that's a park that's owned by the Water Bureau. It's managed by Portland Parks and Recreation. You've got PBOT with a major interest in the Springwater Trail that runs next door.
And that's the Portland Bureau of Transportation.
Yep, sorry. And Environmental Services, looking at it from a stormwater and habitat perspective, they all participated in the master planning process that happened out there. And that's kind of what we're doing on a much larger scale, looking at all city
much
properties.
Much larger scale.
Right. But
with Gateway Green, as we'll get to later today, that property I think was owned by like six different or yeah. had a supervised or had some, there was about six or seven different agencies that had their hand in that piece of pie, and it was a little messy. And I think that's something that you start to learn as you go through these processes, is that they're not always quick. And sometimes they're a little bit messy, which is why it's hard to have that transparency, because it's not always clear to the people even in it who's
right.
participating. So you mentioned an inventory of places that you guys have been building up. Carrie Leonard, can you speak to some of the places that are being looked at?
Oh, everything, I would say, from, you know, little neighborhood parks that may or may not already be in high use, to things that are, again, like Department of Transportation staging facilities. It's been interesting just riding my bike around town, having seen the GIS maps that we have, and then I'll see a piece of property that right now is maybe full of construction trucks or things like that, and I can see, wow, what could we do with that, just that lot, once the construction is done? And so it's run the whole gamut. And then there is screening criteria. So if it's protected habitat or it's a wetland, then those are automatically excluded from consideration.
And Michael, do you know how many properties there are that have come up?
Not a specific number, but I think it counts in the hundreds.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And that's partly why
the screening. And those are all within city limits.
Yeah, it's, and the screening process is crucial because you can't act on that many properties at once. So it's really a way to filter and focus on the best properties. And some properties may not get attention now, may get attention in 10 or 15 years. But one of the other criteria is, you know, how steep the grade is, what kind of trails can fit there, how dense the trails can be, and then also the need. So if there's an area with a higher concentration of youth, maybe there's socioeconomic factors. So all of these will play into the site selection criteria, which we've only just begun to look at.
When I mentioned the theme of this show to friends and also people, you know, in coffee shops, some expressed a stereotype of the off-road cyclist, young, male, white, hipster, having a beard. Since one of the goals, the important goals of sustainability in Portland, according to the website and your group, is equity, how does that fit in with the need to provide facilities in areas where there are no parks, like East Portland, or less parks than on the west?
Michelle Kunick North.
Yeah, so I guess to address the first part of your comment there, that perception of off-road cyclists is really a misperception. When we look at data from the state about who rides bicycles off-road, it's more women than men. It's a wide range of ages, very similar to a lot of other trail activities like hiking, day hiking, riding a bike on a paved trail as opposed to an unpaved trail. It's people of all income levels, and is an accessible activity for a lot of folks. The second part of your question having to do with equity, I think, is incredibly important. And when we're talking about equity in this process, we need to be thinking about it in a few different ways. And this is something that our advisory committee has brought to the table a number of times. First, it's making sure that we're actually hearing from diverse perspectives in this process. And we've started a partnership with the Community Cycling Center to directly reach out to communities that may not normally participate in this process across the city, and really try to make sure that their voices are heard.
So that those voices are part of the planning instead of,
right,
oh, here's what we are giving to you, which isn't actually very equitable.
Right. And then when we get to actual proposals, you know, acknowledging that we may hear from various communities, hey, this actually isn't a huge priority for me, but I really care about having a safe place for my kid to be outside, or about making sure that we're preserving the nature that's around us, and how can we then, as planners and as the city, use off-road cycling investments to help reach those other community goals. So that's something that we're looking for as well.
Speaking of facilities, I know that Forest Park and Riverview are some of the more contentious sites for off-road opportunities. Are these places still on the table?
Yes, they are. Just maybe to speak to each of them. For the Riverview Natural Area, we got some pretty clear direction from City Council when they adopted the Natural Area Management Plan. That the questions that are on the table at Riverview are, should off-road cycling be allowed on the property? And if so, are there any design or management strategies or changes to the concept that was proposed, which is a loop trail around the property, that would really help make a shared use experience there more safe and sustainable? At Forest Park, Forest Park is the largest natural area in the city. It's the area with the highest ecological value and function in the city, and it's been a treasured asset in our community for generations.
Pretty much since the beginning of Portland, yeah.
And because of that, it has a lot of planning that's happened. There are a number of initiatives going on right now.
Yeah, it seems like it's one of the pieces of land you mentioned, like the Riverview has a plan, a regional or
a management plan.
A management plan. I know Forest Park has like seven different management plans that are coming at it at once.
Yeah, so there are all levels of planning, goals, strategies, community priorities that have been established. And what we want to be doing is looking at a few different questions. You know, what's the role of Forest Park in a citywide system? You know, there is off-road cycling there now. How does it kind of play into this larger network? And then is it appropriate to have either additional or improved off-road cycling experiences in Forest Park, particularly ones that would provide a more varied experience than you currently get on Leif Erikson and on the Fire Lanes? If so, how could those trails be planned and designed in a way that would forward those various goals, that would really take care of the park as an amazing natural resource and recreational resource in the city?
And we actually invited a representative of a group called Save Forest Park, who are opposed to cycling there. Mm-hmm. They were not able to come, and we promised them, you know, we'll raise this question because it is an important one. And I live next to Forest Park, 300 meters from McClay Park, so I am concerned about this issue. So do you feel like this group, Save Forest Park, has been successful, or is their voice heard, or what is going on exactly?
Sure. So we hear community concerns, particularly from some users of Forest Park and some neighbors, that often have to do with, will there be an ecological impact on the park? As we mentioned, you know, it is a really important ecological place in the city for both wildlife and things like water quality. Mm-hmm. And if there are additional opportunities to ride a bicycle in the park, are those safe, both for the people on bikes and for people who might be hiking? I think those are very important issues. There are things that we've looked at from the beginning of this process of what are the impacts and positive benefits of having people riding bicycles in our parks and natural areas? And then how can we design any trails in ways that follow best management practices to limit things like impacts on habitat or impacts on water quality, and are safe and enjoyable for people to use together?
I'd like to address that a little bit as well, as Michael Agit. There are trail design standards that can cut down on trail conflict, which is one of the concerns that have been raised. So you can either have separate access points. People on bikes can go further out before they access the trail. You can change sight lines. You can do grade reversals to cut down on water flow. You can do turns and ways to slow the bikers down at critical points, maybe, where you can't see. Also, you can design trails where they're directional. So you can manage the width of the trail to have more users or fewer users. So there's quite a lot that can be addressed through the trail design alone.
And I read this study that you have on your website about impact and benefits. And one of the things that was said is that the impact of the cyclist is about the same as the hiker. However, there were some places where it said, you know, we need more studies, we don't have enough information, it might disturb some nesting patterns. So it's good to know that those, you know, the concerns about soil, water, animals, and humans are addressed.
Yeah, and I think just like...
Oh, go ahead, Carrie.
I think that, again, it's part of the myth of the cyclist that we're out there just to ride. Those of us who do ride off-road are there because we love the trees and we like the interaction with the wildlife that we are lucky enough to see, just like when we're hiking or enjoying our parks in another way. And we want to ensure that whatever we do here, that we build, does not take away from that experience at all. That's a big reason why people don't ride on pavement is to immerse themselves in a place like Forest Park.
Well, and I, you know, one thing I don't think we've addressed yet is, why do we even need a master plan? Is there that much of a need for off-road cycling in Portland?
Well, so if it depends on how you define need. If you're talking about sheer numbers of people who are participating, we have estimates from the state that it's probably about 11 to 12% of people, which in some ways may not seem like a lot, but it's more than participate in things like field sports, soccer, lacrosse, things that the city does provide recreational opportunities for. And we have a lot of community interest that has been expressed over decades to find additional riding opportunities in the city. I think one of the underlying reasons for the plan, though, is all of the work that's been done so far has been on a site-by-site basis. So there were conversations about Forest Park, there were conversations about Riverview, conversations about Gateway Green, and it's really hard to look at a citywide need in the context of one site. And so this is providing that larger foundation and kind of larger understanding across the city of what role different places can play.
Well, and is there also some thought that the activity might grow if the facilities were provided?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's, I mean, for me.
Yeah.
Well, we are listening to the KBOO Bike Show. This month, we're bringing you the latest update on the Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan with Michelle Kunick-North, Carrie Leonard, and Michael Weitzel. We will be back in just a moment, and we'll be joined later by Tom Archer, who will be giving us the latest on the Gateway Green Project. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the KBOO Bike Show here on 90.7 KBOO in Portland. We're here today with our guests Michelle Kunick-North, Carrie Leonard, and Michael Weitzel, who are giving us an inside look into what Portland might look like for those of us that would like to ride off-road in the dirt in the future. So the future is coming. What does that future look like? What is the plan actually starting to shape out to be?
So,
yeah, I'm going to let you handle it. Start with that. Let's start with you, Michelle Kunick-North.
So the plan itself, when it's completed, will have information on what off-road cycling is, what the various types of experiences are that we're looking for in the city, and what the needs are for those experiences. So this could be anything from a beginner trail that's relatively flat and not very technical to things that are more technical or challenging. It could be things like pump tracks, skill parks, as well as race venues for things like cyclocross. At the end of the planning process, we will have a plan that lays out, kind of designates properties around the city that we're proposing for off-road cycling, as well as design and management recommendations that kind of come along with some of those properties. So how can it be done in a way that really meets the needs?
So will I know that the first step is to get a draft plan, and you were hoping the last time we had you on the air to have that done by now. It's not. And maybe you can give us a little bit of a timeline for that. But when you say the plan that will be presented to people to comment on, will that be a draft plan or will that be the finalized plan?
Great. So yes, we're not done. So for anyone out there who was hoping they could still comment, you certainly can still comment. We have been posting all of the draft materials kind of piece by piece as we go through this process. So to date, it's been a lot of what Alon was talking about, some of that impact and best practice reports, things about needs in the community, the kind of desired outcomes for the planning process. What we will be releasing early next year is a map that Michael and Carrie mentioned that takes those 1,400 and so properties in the city and...
whittles it down to?
It'll show for any property whether there's potential off-road cycling opportunity on that site and whether we think that it's really a good opportunity. So 1,400, probably down to a few hundred. We'll really lay out for people, here are kind of the constraints on this site, some things that we might want to consider, environmental conditions, regulatory restrictions, other things like that. And we'll really be looking for community members to come to an interactive website and comment on, do they support or oppose off-road cycling? So we can start to whittle down to an actual proposal. Do they have any comments about their knowledge of that site? Hey, it would really work better if you could make the trails one directional, or maybe have a trail that both hikers and bikers could be on, because we need more places to be outside in this neighborhood. You know, so that sort of feedback is really valuable as well.
And this is a question for Michael and Carrie. How do you see off-road cycling in 10, 20 years? What would you like? What's your dream about off-road cycling?
My dream is for every community, every neighborhood to have opportunities for kids to ride off-road on their bikes without having to travel too far. And for when those kids become adults, that they can go further with their advanced skills and go to longer rides at more maybe regional-based parks around the city as well.
Carrie Leonard, how about you?
I'd like to just expand that to anybody who doesn't have access to a personal vehicle for whatever reason, versus like they're not old enough to drive, they don't have the money for a personal vehicle, that they can ride their bike off pavement still within the city limits, and they can get there relatively easily without, again, having access to a personal vehicle. That is my vision.
That's a pretty beautiful thing. I think in both cases, to be able to think of a city that is vibrant in a whole new way of taking advantage of what's around us, and as our population grows, finding new opportunities. I think that's our best bet for the future, for whether that's cycling on road or off road, getting more and more people interested in bikes and recreating and being active. So. We are going to shift the show a little bit now, so I'd like to say thanks to Michelle Kunick-North, Carrie Leonard, and Michael Weitzel for joining us on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
Thank you, Tori.
Next, I'd like to welcome Tom Archer. Tom has been one of the boots-on-the-ground workers of Portland's newest, oldest park, which is currently being developed into what will be our first bike-focused park within the city limits, with plenty of off-road opportunities. Tom Archer, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tori.
So
yeah, good to see you.
Gateway Green is kind of this amazing, magical property that we had you on the show in August of 2009, to kind of say, what's going on? There's this idea that we might build this magical place, and it looks like it's actually starting to come together.
Yeah, it is coming together. It's been a long time coming. This is a, for those of your listeners that aren't aware, this is about a 25-acre parcel. It's out in the Gateway area. It's a former piece of ODOT right-of-way. And really starting in 2008, there was this grand idea to, you know, to develop some kind of a park there. And when we, as a group, as the mountain bike community found out about it, we approached the people who were really kind of floating the idea at that time and thought, hey, you know, could this be a bike park? So so what is it? It's developed into what is envisioned as an outdoor and active recreation space in East Portland, an area that's, you know, underserved, frankly, with outdoor opportunities. Because of its location, configuration, and prior ownership, it's proven to be very difficult and a long process to get to where we are.
I mean, just for our listeners, I mentioned earlier there's about seven different jurisdictions or something. There's six. It's ODOT.
ODOT owned the property.
That's Oregon Department of Transportation.
Oregon Department of Transportation, yes. But because it's landlocked, there's been a number of other agencies that we've had to interact with. I mean, the property is surrounded by two freeways, I-84 and 205, and it's got a MAX line on one side and the Union Pacific Railroad on the other side. So there are a number of challenges, not just jurisdictional, but site-related issues that we've been working through and continue to work through to try and make this a feasible park project.
Well, and I know a lot of our listeners are like, why don't we have more trails? Why 2009 to 2016, that's forever, or yeah, seven whole years. And I think for our listeners, it's important to know, when did this project actually even being, before it was even mountain bikes, when it was just started to be spoken of as a park, that was 20 years ago?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the first time we became aware of it was really in 2008, when Linda Robinson and Ted Gilbert, who are neighbors and property owners in that area, had kind of floated this idea in a real way, and it started to get some traction. But at that point, again, ODOT owned the property. So there's been a number of steps along the way. The first was to convene an Oregon Solutions process for the property because of the complexity of the ownership and other issues. And that took 2 years just to work through that. The end result of that was ultimately the transfer of the property to the city of Portland. They bought it in 2014.
And where did the money come from to buy that?
Well, it was actually a pretty small amount of money. It ended up only being about $20,000.
Whoa!
And that's one of the reasons that I think this is considered a huge opportunity. Is it's 25 acres of undeveloped land in the urban area. There just isn't another piece of property of that size and proximity. I mean, there are 65 million vehicles which pass this property every year. So it's in the center of our transportation infrastructure, and in an area of the city which is growing, you know, tremendously. So it's a huge opportunity, but there's also been a lot of constraints that have come along with it, and that's what we spent a lot of the last, you know, 7 or 8 years working on.
And
Go ahead, Alain.
And it's next to where the Rocky Butte Trail was, right?
Well, yeah.
I remember that when it was still housing inmates in the early 80s. How did you yourself become so interested and willing to devote 7 years of your life to make this a possibility?
Yeah, well, at the time, I was on the board of directors of the Northwest Trail Alliance. And part of our mission, among other things, is to try and develop off-roading opportunities in the city, among other areas. I mean, we do a lot of work out in the national forests, on BLM land, state parks, but part of our mission has always been to expand off-road cycling opportunities in the city. So that's how I became aware of it, and I'm just stuck with it. I later joined the board, and became involved that way. I saw the potential for the project, and then it just kind of became an obsession and a passion, I guess.
Well, and part of this progress has been getting matching funds and getting funding. So can you talk a little bit about what's been asked and what's been achieved?
Sure. The the funding picture is starting to come together. We've pursued a number of funding opportunities, but the biggest success to date really has been the $1 million Nature Neighborhoods grant that we got for Metro. So I think that was in 2015 that was awarded. It was the largest grant that Metro had ever made. Of course, those things don't happen overnight. We had laid a lot of groundwork and done a lot of homework with Metro, and they realized the potential for this property and this project to happen. So, but with that grant designation comes the obligation to come up with another $2 million. So, in other words, it's a 2-to-1 match. And we're in the process of raising those funds. And I think we're getting pretty close to a point where we're going to be able to make some pretty significant announcements with regard to that in the next couple months.
And what is the Dirt Lab, and how did they become involved?
Yeah, so the Dirt Lab is really, well, let me step back for a second, because mm-hmm. the Gateway Green Project is not just a bike park. I mean, it's really envisioned as an outdoor space for children and adults. There will be bike elements, single track trails and other things like that. But there will also be walking paths. There's going to be a nature play area. There's going to be some kind of stormwater demonstration projects probably, and there'll be kind of education opportunities integrated into that. So
as well as facilities, right? So there'll actually potentially be bathrooms and
yeah.
actual real. Well, yeah. some parks don't have that.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, when we do the full build out of the park, there'll be a fully realized park with sewer water infrastructure and those kind of things. So the Dirt Lab is really came about because through our feasibility efforts and looking at, okay, how can we deliver these services to this project, this parcel, because it's landlocked, we realized that site access for construction is constrained. There really isn't a way to get heavy equipment onto the site right now.
Right, the irony is it's surrounded by highways right. and transportation,
right.
yet there's no way to actually get into the park
right.
outside of by foot or by
right.
bike or a small vehicle.
So we're working on that piece. There's a couple different options. It looks like we could possibly modify a bridge that ODOT owns to get into the property, and we think there's a real opportunity to do that. But we think that's probably 3-5 years away. So we came up with the idea of the Dirt Lab really as a demonstration, phase one of the Gateway Green project that will be focused on the bike elements. And we've been working with parks to basically get their approval and get them on board. I got to give a kudos to Ross Swanson, who is the project manager at Portland Parks. Ross was assigned to the project after the city bought the property, and he's really dedicated a lot of time to make this thing happen. He believes in the project, and I got to say, I don't think we'd be where we are at today if he wasn't involved. So.
Is this some of the first? Oh, go ahead with the Dirt Lab. Like, continue to say.
So, what. Really, the Dirt Lab is really kind of a demonstration project in phase one of the Gateway Green. It's considered interim improvements because the ultimate build out will be we'll do full grading and a lot of changes. But we wanted to get something on the ground to prove that there's the resources to do it, first of all, that it can be done in a responsible, sustainable way, and that there's enthusiasm about actually getting out and doing this stuff. So we went to parks with this idea. They were very supportive, and then subsequent to that, the Friends of Gateway Green did a crowdfund in October, and we raised another $100,000. Most all of which will go towards building the Dirt Lab. So I think we finished our crowdfund about middle of October on a Friday, and by Monday we already had our contractors out on the ground starting to dig dirt. So they've been on the ground for a couple weeks. The first phase is to build about 2 miles of a single track loop. We're going to build.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
So what does that phase mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the first phase is really we're going to build about 2 miles of single track trail. We're going to build some dirt jumps, and then the third piece of that, which will probably be done in the spring, is we're going to build a skills area. So they're all bike focused elements.
And what is the skills area exactly?
Well, really it's just kind of that. It's usually a small, compact area where kids or adults can go to kind of just build their bike handling skills, stamina, and confidence. And so it can be a number of different things. It can be kind of a pump track where you're moving through undulations in the terrain, learning how to move your bike safely. It can be, kind of elevated areas that you're riding on. It could be, small jumps or drops or those kind of things. So it can be a number of different things, but the idea is that it's a small, compact area where people can build their skills.
So it's practice. It's your scales of your piano scales
of
riding off-road.
Yeah, exactly.
So is this some of the first single-track type trail that's being built in Portland? Michelle Koenig North is here too. I don't know if you can speak to this, but is this some of the first ground that's been broken on new trails in a while?
I think it's probably the first example of something that's being built for bike specific purposes. I mean, there have been other trails built. The trail changes that were made out of Powell Butte a few years ago were designed with multiple users in mind. This is really focused on building something that is bike specific. And so the building techniques, the end product is really oriented towards, towards mountain bikes.
And how does that differ from a hiking trail?
Well, since a lot of the trails in Portland have been built, the design approaches to building trails have changed. But bikers are also looking for different experiences. Hiking trails are generally flatter. In other words, they don't have as many rolling undulations, which does two things. I mean, it creates more fun for the cyclist, but it also is a way to deal with runoff. So in other words, you're not having water run down the trail for long distances. So there's different design standards that have kind of evolved in large part to the International Mountain Bicycling Association. So we're utilizing those principles and of course adapting it to the site.
Michelle?
Well, just to follow up on what Tom said, for that very reason, a lot of the trails that we have currently in the city in places like Forest Park wouldn't necessarily work as trails to just suddenly allow people on bikes to ride on, because they weren't designed to those standards to allow either shared use or to allow bikes in a sustainable way. So,
yeah. Well, and in some ways, I'd say, As a hiker in Forest Park, I don't ride my bike there very often, but I do hike there. I feel like I sometimes see mountain bike things that the mountain bike community and the International Mountain Bike Association has pressed for trails in the way for trails to be built, that I wish that when the trails were built in Forest Park, they'd known more about them, so that, like for Wildwood as an example, it could just be so much more sustainably built. And it just wasn't, because they didn't know these, they didn't have the same environmental, they didn't know. And
so that's another great opportunity that we have with Gateway Green, is to kind of show that proof of concept of how we use these new design standards. Does the combination of that project and the Off-Road Cycling Master Plan give us an opportunity to change those standards across the city?
Yeah.
Well, since you're breaking ground right now at Gateway Green, what are the most pressing needs out there?
Well, so a little bit more about how this is actually getting done. We, as I mentioned, we raised $100,000, but the idea really is to do some of the work with professional builders whom we have already engaged on the site, but then also really engage the community. And we've been holding some work parties on a small scale to date, but we expect to kind of ramp that up, because we really want to generate interest and awareness about the project. So there will be an opportunity for the community, and not just the cycling community. I mean, the park has other needs. For example, on Saturday, we had a work party to work on the trails, but simultaneously, there was an ivy pulling event, and there will be more of that. We really want to kind of pull these user groups together, and we see this as an opportunity to do that. So there it will be a combination of, hired professionals and then also volunteers. And we think that it's probably going to be a kind of a work in progress. It will change over time. You know, we'll see what works, what doesn't, and you know, we'll continue to make it fun for people.
And you mentioned kids. Are there any plans for, you know, camps or instruction, or if needed?
Yeah, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because part of what we're also doing is really kind of developing a framework for the future management of the park. We've discussed this, what this looks like with parks, and I think the Friends of Gateway Green is going to play a large part in the overall, in the future management and programming of the park. So we've already established a formal relationship with Community Cycling Center, for example. They're planning to host some camps out there next year. I suspect that a lumberyard will bring their curriculum and host some camps out there. So definitely that's kind of right in our top of our list, is to activate the site, really provide opportunities for kids primarily, but also for adults to get out there and enjoy the site.
Michelle Kunick-North?
You had said, you, when we mentioned kids, it looked like you had wanted to add something.
Well, nothing other than, that's something we hear over and over and over again with regards to our larger planning process, that parents want their kids to be able to get out on their Huffy bike or on their Strider bike even. You know, Michael's son, I know, is out there on his Strider bike and have a safe place to learn how to ride.
Yeah, I think, you know, when I was growing up, we just rode in the corner lot, and those places have really kind of disappeared to a large degree in our city.
Yeah, we would set up obstacle courses and like grab 2x4s or what, I don't know.
Right, and you know, and part of that is because of the density goals that we have. In other words, land is very high valued, and so those places just don't exist like they used to. And so I think it presents, you know, an even higher need to create these places at a neighborhood scale. And I think part of what Michelle and Michael were talking about is, you know, this 1,400 properties seems like, you know, a huge number. But I think part of what they're looking at is, all right, what can we provide on a neighborhood scale? And that could be a, you know, an acre site or a 2 acre site.
Right, the neighborhood lot, literally.
Right. Mm-hmm. But then also then looking at, all right, how do these places connect? Is there an opportunity to connect these so that you actually have a regional system?
That's so, if our listeners are interested in finding out more about the project or even volunteering, where should they go to find out more about Gateway Green?
Yeah, well, if you want to know more about the Gateway Green project proper and Dirt Lab, go to gatewaygreenpdx.org. That is the Friends of Gateway Green website. Northwest Trail Alliance is also going to be posting information about work parties and such. And if people aren't on their mailing list, I would encourage you to do that. You don't have to be a member to get on their mailing list. Their website is nw-trail.org. And then we've actually established a project blog for the Gateway Green or the Dirt Lab build, and that's bermstyle.com. So those three will get you. Yeah, bermstyle.com. Check it out.
And we will have all of those on our website, on our Facebook page, so that if you are looking for opportunities to participate, and we'll have some links to the Portland Off-Road Cycling Master Plan as well. There is an acronym for that, but we've saved you,
we don't
dear
use
listeners,
it.
Yet. On all about all of that. Alan?
No, I'm very happy to hear about these plans and looking forward to seeing what the future brings here.
Yes, and I do want to make one announcement before the show is over. As Alan mentioned at the beginning of the hour, we have lost a fellow cyclist on the St. John's Bridge in Portland. It's a bridge that, for many of you who don't live here, many people ride on as an access to more natural areas and open roads. It's very high pressure traffic, and unfortunately someone was killed recently. But there will be a memorial ride that's planned tomorrow evening. That's Thursday, November 3rd at 6 p.m., meeting at the park, Cathedral Park, which is underneath the bridge, and riding from there. So if you're interested, you can find out more. We'll have a link to that as well on our website. Want to thank you, Tom Archer, so much for being with us and talking about the Gateway Green and Michelle Kunick North. You've been listening to the KBOO Bike Show. We are broadcast from Portland, Oregon on the first Wednesday of every month. Podcasts are available on iTunes, and all past episodes are always generously archived at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. And if you are interested in either of the episodes where we had Tom on or Michelle on before, you can find those at that website. The Bike Show is also produced by Alon Robb and Meg Keyes. We'd like to thank our in-studio engineer, Tammy Dean, our web host, Chris Smith, and today's and our guest editor, Josh Hetrick. We'll be back next month with more news and film, or well, with more news and views. Until then, make it a great day. Keep riding your bike, and thank you to Michael and Carrie for joining us as well. Have a great day out there.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Skyline Tavern Project, a not-for-profit historic saloon at the edge of Forest Park dedicated to supporting art and ecology through live music, food, and horseshoes, 8031 Northwest Skyline Boulevard and skytav.com. And that's it for public affairs programming for this morning, Wednesday. It's just noon, and it's time for an afternoon of music. Stay tuned for that on KBOO Portland. Marcia and Nick are going to kick it off with Jazz Lives after a couple of announcements. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor for the Real Cool Film Series at the Clinton Street Theater. The film this month, The Jazz Loft, according to W. Eugene Smith, showing Friday, November 4th at 7 p.m. In the 1950s, dozens of jazz musicians jam night after night in New York loft buildings, including Thelonious Monk and Ronnie Free, not realizing they are being captured in sound and picture by Life magazine photographer W. Eugene Smith, who lives in the loft space next door. Again, that's The Jazz Loft, according to W. Eugene Smith, showing Friday, November 4th at